is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Survive in advance or die trying. Week 3 was complete carnage in NFL survivor polls all over the country. Plus, we've got questionable coaching decisions, more bad news bears on a Sunday, which has become tradition. A 70 spot in an NFL game, Michael, and I don't know about you, but I'm feeling all 22. Yes, that was a Taylor Swift reference because I am here for the Travis Kelce era. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Safe to say on this edition of the Lombardi Line, Michael, there is no shortage of content for us. How are you today?
I'm really good. How are you? How are you doing today?
I'm good, except for the survivor carnage involved me as well. But other than that, you know, I'm okay. I'm making it.
Understand that. I mean, look, you know, everybody kind of went through it, right? I think to me, the problem you get into is the options were not as many people took Dallas as they thought they would have. And a lot of people took Kansas City. But I mean, look, I thought it was a good play. A lot of people thought it was a good play. It ended up not being a good play. I don't know how to explain Jacksonville to anybody. I mean, how do you allow a fullback to truck? It's 17-14. You're back in the game. You're thinking you're going to win. And you squib kick it to a fullback, and you can't get him on the ground. The guy was looking back. He was thinking that there had to be a penalty on the play.
Michael, it was just an embarrassing performance all around. Like, there was nothing that I saw from Jacksonville that felt endearing at any point in that game. And it was one of those instances where, like, again, I had to turn the TV off because there's just no point in watching at this point. For anybody who missed it, the Jags got dogged in that game. 73% of the survivor pool now here for Circa Survivor, Michael, from the time that this thing started, are officially out. I'll give you the numbers. We're down from 9,267 to now just 2,481 entries left after only 3 weeks. And there's still a handful of entries, by the way, that are in the mix today with the doubleheader on Monday Night Football, which, by the way, we will preview throughout the course of the show. But going into yesterday, just shy of 6,000 entries were remaining. That was cut down by 58% because so many entries, myself included, Brent Musburger included, my guy Matt Brown, who's my former co-host here at VSiN, he had 3 entries all in Jacksonville, all out. The Ravens lose to the Colts in that weird field goal game and the Dallas Cowboys. So just massive, massive losses yesterday.
I mean, it's just, it's hard to really get your, you know, to understand how could this happen, right? Like, and then when you look at the box score and what Stroud was able to do, you know, throwing for 280 yards, not turning the ball over.
Tank Dell. How good was Tank Dell?
I mean, unbelievable. They didn't run the football effectively in the game, and yet they still win. I mean, there's just like, how does this happen? You know what? If you're Jacksonville now, you got to get on an airplane and fly over to London. With this, you've lost 2 straight home games. One, you know, okay, you lost to probably the best defense in the AFC, but now you just lost to the Houston Texans, who have nobody, who missing most of their team. You know, Stingley went on IR. The safeties were gone. I mean, if there was ever a time you're going to win this game, it would have been now.
Yeah,
and, Michael, and the fact is, you had all this opportunity to promote to get your team to understand that we lost at home to these guys last year because we turned it over.
I feel like mass exodus and survivor, like 3 years in a row for a lot of people, has come on Jacksonville. I'm so tainted from this team now. I want nothing to do with them. They go in as a 7.5, 8-point favorite, lose this game by 20. Just embarrassing in so many areas, Michael. And because you mentioned flight, did you see all the flight issues that happened with Pittsburgh over the last 24 hours?
Yeah, I saw that.
Crazy.
That's a hard thing. I don't know what would happen. I don't know what would happen. You know, like they landed in Kansas City, right? And so I wasn't, you know, like, did they get a hotel room? Are they staying there? But, you know, again, what a great win for them in Las Vegas last night. But then now they got to fly back down to Houston. But you could see Pittsburgh last night. They were in control of that game. They were going to win that game. You know, Las Vegas turns the ball over. 6 interceptions from Garoppolo in 3 games. You can't win beating anybody like that. Las Vegas and Minnesota and the Giants have yet to force a turnover.
Yeah,
think about that.
For the Raiders, 7 turnovers in 3 games, and they don't have a takeaway themselves.
No, I'm sorry, it's the Giants and the Rams. I'm sorry, the Rams too. Now the Rams play tonight, but when you can't force turnovers and you give up 6, you're not going to win it. You're not going to beat anybody.
I want to get your perspective on the end of that game last night, Michael, because I feel like it's very fresh in a lot of people's minds. Sunday Night Football, final score, Steelers beat the Raiders 23-18. To set the scene for some people who, in case they did miss it, the Raiders were trailing 23-7. They end up having this long 11-play drive, score, convert the 2-point conversion. Defense gets a stop. They get the ball back. And, Michael, in a situation where you're down 8, your defense does what they need to, and you drive down the field and things stall. Instead of going for it on 4th and 4 from the 8-yard line, they kick the field goal. Take me through this decision from Josh McDaniels, and he defended it afterwards. He said, you're going to need another possession anyways. Do you agree with the thought process that he had here or not?
I disagreed with the one he went for it on 4th and 8. He's a fourth. I think he was 2nd and 35. Remember this, with 13 minutes in the fourth quarter. They had a chance there, and they got it to within 4th and 4, and he went for it, and they don't get it. I would have kicked the field goal there. That's the one, and I haven't talked to Josh today. That's the one that I would have the most problems with. The one he went for, it gave himself a chance to win. He assumed that he was going to get the ball back. Now, I know that's a big assumption when you're dealing with the Raider defense. You give up 5 yards on a running play when you think you have it stuffed on first down, and then 3rd and 2, they throw up a sprint left option to Allen Robinson, and they get the first down, and you're basically out of the game. But to be in the game after you turn the ball over twice and gave them this opportunity is something. But I really found fault with the 4th and 2. So let me go through it here, Stormy. It's the fourth quarter, just the start of the fourth quarter. And the reason I had fault with this is because I'd watched the Packer game. And the Packers only had the ball for 6:53 in the fourth quarter, yet they scored 18 points. They came back. They got it back in the game. They had no business winning that game, but they did. Mm-hmm. And they came back in it. So when the Raiders had the ball, it's 4th and 5 at the Steeler 22. There's 13:18 to go in the game. You kick it there. Now it's 23-10. You come back down again, you score. Now it's 23-17. Now all you need is one more possession. So that last possession could have been the game winner, right? Mm-hmm. You could have won the game there, or they would have had to punt the ball back, or they would have had the ball back with their defense. Mm-hmm. So I think, to me, one mistake compounds another one. Right. That's my point here. And I think by not going for it in the beginning of the fourth, I think that's the regret. Everybody focuses on the not going for it. That becomes the major of conversation. But when you understand game management, there's always a problem that occurred beforehand. Like in the Green Bay game, LaFleur went for it. He kicked the field goal. And kicking that field goal at the time in the fourth quarter gave him a chance to win the game. And he executed, and his defense got stops. Now, he won the game because the Saints field goal kicker didn't make the kick. But still, you get the point here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an 18-17 win for Green Bay over New Orleans. But to your point about the Sunday Night Football game specifically, I think that's interesting perspective, that your decision earlier in the quarter greatly impacts the way that things played out to close out the game. And I think that people get all up in arms, especially in today's day and age of analytics and going forward in certain situations. The next gen stats here on this have, like, had Vegas rolled the dice and gone for it on the 4th and 4 there, 13.8% win probability versus 8.5. And so, right, I think that's where
let's call TV time out here and talk about that. Okay. And let's shift our attention to the Vikings game. Okay.
Great.
And I love this win,
especially because the Raiders play the Chargers next week too. So,
right. All right. So now here we got my man, Staley, comes out here, Mr. Analytics. He's the poster child. Everybody loves him for analytics. 4th and 1 at his own 24. Nope. I think it's a stupid decision to go for it. Some guy on Twitter puts up 88% if he gets it, they win. 82% if they punt, they win. 6% difference. He did the right thing. Okay. See, here's the problem with analytics if you don't apply it to the game. All right? 88%, what's the play call? Now, Staley, who prides himself on being Mr. Analytics, right? He's watched this game for 58 minutes and 30 seconds. He's called 14 runs, and they've gained 30 yards. He's called 49 passes, seven of which have gone incomplete. And the Minnesota Vikings have only touched the ball three times. Three times they got their hands on the opponent passes. So it's only 88%. If I call a pass, what does that number go up to? If I call a run, what does that number go down to? See, it's incomplete. These predictions of game win probability don't include the play, nor do they take into account what is actually happening in the game.
Michael, I love how in sync we've become that you answered the question before I even asked it, because I was going to ask you, what concerned you most? The fact that they went for it in that situation with a couple minutes to play on their own 24, or that it was a run play and Josh Kelly gets stuffed instead of giving Justin Herbert a chance when he's 40 for 47 in the game? Like, that is exactly it. Like, what's frustrating more, the going for it or the play call in the situation that's worse?
Well, I mean, I had trouble with both. I would have punted. But if you're going to be Mr. Analytic and you're the poster child and you're the greatest coach, according to Pro Football Focus and every analytical community, then you have to throw the ball. You have to throw it, because that's what the analytics says you should do. If you're studying, you can't have it both ways. You can't use analytics to cover up your stupidity and then hide behind analytics when you run the ball. Like, nobody's called him out on that. Why would we run it here? They can't even make a play on the football. Their secondary stinks. We've thrown seven incomplete passes.
Even Keenan Allen completed a pass play for a touchdown. You tweeted, there is stupid, and then there's Charger stupid.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in all of the NFL action with great offers every game day. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw $5 down on any of this week's matchups to walk away an instant winner. Football's more fun when you're in on the action. So download the app now and sign up with the code VEGAS. New customers bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. So we got the doubleheader Monday night tonight, moving ahead to next week as well. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Use that code VEGAS. The crown is yours. Back here on the Lombardi Line, we continue our Monday Night Football doubleheader conversation with Jordan Schultz, NFL insider, newsbreaker in the space, doing great work for The Score. And, of course, the question on everybody's minds today, Jordan, is the health and status of quarterback Joe Burrow for the Cincinnati Bengals as they get set to host the Rams tonight. I know you reported yesterday that he was going to do a workout today, that he wants to get back out there with the calf improving. What's the latest that you're hearing?
Yeah, so basically, you know, Cincinnati's been obviously very diligent about this. He just signed the most lucrative deal in NFL history, and they want to take every precaution, but they also understand they're 0-2. We know he's a big-time competitor, and everyone in that building wants him to play, none more than Burrow. So he worked out this morning. It went well, and I think the team is optimistic about it, but they want to take this up to game time, not only for gamesmanship, but also because they are evaluating every possible factor, I'm told, which also includes, maybe most importantly, could he re-injure himself more? You know, if he doesn't play, how much more can it heal? How fast can it heal? And what I was told yesterday morning and really the last few days was, if he were to sit for a week or two, it wouldn't necessarily make him 100%. He'd probably have to sit for 6 weeks or so to really get back to feeling himself. And if he's not necessarily at risk of injuring the Achilles, then it's going to be a discomfort level and how much he feels comfortable playing through that pain. So knowing all that, I'm optimistic that he's going to play. I wouldn't say he's certain, but I would say that given the workout this morning, the fact that they feel pretty good about his short and long-term prognosis, there's a pretty decent chance he plays.
You know, but if he's not going to get hurt moving forward, if he can't re-injure it, or, you know, he's so young, the Achilles is not going to get re-injured. As we see, sometimes these calf injuries manifest themselves into Achilles injuries as well. But to me, what was concerning watching him play last week was he couldn't drive the football like he could, and he can't really move. And this offensive line, for as much money as they put into it, has not played well. And, you know, last week they put, you know, they put somebody over Ted Karras and he had struggled. We saw Myles Garrett line up over him in the opening game and he went by him like nothing. I mean, when you isolate, if you put Aaron Donald in a one-on-one, he's going to come after Burrow. That's going to be a problem. I would be concerned about this, and I know they have a sense of urgency to win this, but, you know, to me, this is a hard game for him, especially on a short week where at least if he had some rest, he might be better off if he did that. Because the other players around him, Jordan, I mean, look, Chase has 10 catches for 70 yards.
100%, 100%. I mean, we saw T. Higgins pop against Baltimore, but Chase has not gotten off to the type of star Tyler Boyd. And it's a good point, Michael. I would say that last year when they were 0-2, he was sacked an NFL record 13 times through the first 2 weeks. He's only been sacked twice these first couple weeks, which is, I guess that's the only silver lining. It's extremely hard for me to sit back here and disagree with you, though. I'm curious, when you say he can't drive the football, so that means his plant leg, right, is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. There's no, you know, everything about a quarterback is your lower body. That's why baseball pitchers run in the outfield. They have to strengthen their legs, which helps their arm. And when you can't drive your lower body or you have to tort everything from your hip, it's a real issue. And the ball doesn't really get to where it needs to. And in their passing game, which is not, you know, Tua doesn't have to have a great arm in Miami's passing game because everything's short, the ball's coming out quick. And he's just got to be accurate. This passing game is they're in 11 all the time. They got to win with talent. You know, there's really not a lot. And they don't move the quarterback. There's no boots or nakeds in this offense to separate. And there's very little play action. When you're in shotgun as much as they are, the linebackers just read the depth of the back. If the back's a little bit behind the runner, the quarterback, mm-hmm. it's a good chance it's a run. If he's even with them, it's a good chance it's a pass.
It's also, I think they're bottom three or four since the beginning of last season in pre-snap and not only pre-snap motion, but at the snap motion. So there's not a lot of deception. I hear what you're saying. I selfishly as a football fan, you want him to play, but given how young he is in his future, the fact that he just became the highest paid player ever, I'm always cautious, especially with quarterbacks and knowing his competitiveness, it's like that constant push and pull. You can imagine that this entire day he's pushing the play. He did make, I was told, some improvement over the last few days. He is feeling better. I don't know what percentage that is, but I guess that's worth noting.
Cincinnati up from as low as a 1.5-point favorite to 3 now with the optimism on Joe Burrow. Jordan Schultz, NFL insider, kind enough to join us here on the Lombardi line. I want to ask you about the situation that's going on with the New York Jets. Head coach Robert Saleh yesterday saying he still feels that Zach Wilson is the guy that gives them the best chance to win. If you are the Jets right now, how at risk do you feel like you are of losing the locker room if you stick with Zach Wilson? But also, what are the other options realistically out there for this team, Jordan, that you're understanding?
Well, they don't have the draft capital to make a trade. You know, every team in the league that has a quality backup is going to want something valuable in return, some type of pick. The Jets don't have it because of what they've given up. Cap wise, I guess, yeah, they could go out and get a Carson Wentz or a Matt Ryan who says he doesn't want to play, but they've made it abundantly clear that they don't want to do that, at least externally. I don't see how they can't make a move. You know, Tim Boyle's behind Zach Wilson. He's not a threat. Wilson has been not bad, but downright awful. He's averaging under 4 yards per attempt. You know, I didn't get to see the entire Patriots game. I watched about a half of it. I thought he looked just, timid, insecure in the pocket. He doesn't go through progressions like a typical quarterback who's in his third year. He doesn't scan. It's very strange to watch. It's almost like watching a guy who's never taken a snap. And I understand that he's still young, but I just don't see it. You know, to me, for them not to make a move, you're at risk of alienating your locker room. I know that the players have been, I think, really mature with the media saying all the right things. But the bottom line is you have a Super Bowl caliber roster. At least that's what you believe you do, especially defensively. And every single game, every quarter that goes by where he's unable to move the football and produce, you almost get to a point of no return. So I don't see how they can continue down this path and not sign a veteran.
And what are you hearing out of their building? I mean, we saw the blow-ups on the sideline, Michael Carter. We know that Garrett Wilson's unhappy. We know last year they were wearing Mike White T-shirts. Like, what is the vibe out of the building that you're hearing?
I think the players are trying to be positive because it's still very early. But I think without question, there is a lot of frustration, especially defensively, because they have played really well. I mean, I think this defense has a chance to be a top five, top eight D. I mean, they've done a hell of a job. They have great young talent. They have to be perfect just to be in a game. You know, 2 years ago, Carson Wentz had 27 TDs and 7 picks. I'm not saying he's the perfect solution, but he's better than Zach Wilson. I mean, the guy has the lowest QBR and completion percentage and in the NFL. You cannot continue down this path. So there's definitely frustration, and I would say even defensively, it's probably the hardest, because when you're playing perfect or close to perfect football and it's still not enough, you're allowing, when New England scored 13 points and you're not winning games, it's brutal.
I heard somebody ask the question earlier, and I want to ask you, the 1985 Bears, would they have won with Zach Wilson as their quarterback?
No.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
That's a different era. Yeah. I would feel more comfortable answering the Seattle Legion of Boom era, because that's more my era. If Mike says no to the 85 Bears with Singletary, I'm going to say no to
You got to complete some passes to win. You can't. I mean, look, they lost yesterday. Should have been a bigger loss, and they only gave up 15 points. I mean,
15, yeah.
You're going to make a. Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, they have to make a change. And I was one of the few that said you can't make a change, but they have no choice. He's going to lose his team. And here's the other thing: what mask all these problems is, the last 2 weeks they've given up 130 and 157 yards rushing. This is not an elite defense. It's good. It ain't elite.
I didn't realize that. So you don't think they have, you don't think they have the ability defensively to be a top five? Is that too aggressive?
They haven't showed it so far, and teams are playing conservative on them, Jordan. Nobody wants to turn the ball over against them, because you know what? They know the other guy isn't going to score.
Jordan, we're up against it, but cannot thank you enough. This is really, really great insight.
No problem.
Thanks, Take Jordan.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see the changes in action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match that public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com.
Appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business. It's time you and me had a private talk when you're Step Into My Office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Ooh-wee. After the games we saw yesterday, Michael, there are some people in the NFL that need to have a seat at your table and have a little bit of a talking to. So how about we start with head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? Mike McCarthy stepping into the office after what was the worst, largest upset loss since 2006 for Dallas, as they go in an 11-point favorite against the Arizona Cardinals, lose outright. After allowing just 10 points the first 2 weeks, they let up 28 to Josh Dobbs and the Cardinals. If Mike McCarthy's in your office today, Michael, what are you talking to him about? Is it a bad sign for the future, or just a bad game?
You know, you can't let this game beat you twice. So the best thing about this game is your team's going to be focused this week, because you got the Patriots coming in at 425. Patriots coming off a win. The Patriots can match up to you physically. Can they match up to you talent-wise on the perimeter? We'll see. But the greatest thing about this game is any loss in the NFL for a good team is you refocus your team. And you can refocus the areas that you must improve on. You didn't lose this game because you took them lightly. You lost this game because you're 1-for-5 in the red zone. You lost this game because you had 10 penalties. You lost this game because the first five drives of the game, the Cardinals scored and you got behind 23-0. So all those things are fixable. All those things are in your control. And the further you stay within the things that you can control and not worry about what's tomorrow, you're going to be a much better team. Now, we know you had a ton of injuries, but that's also a good thing because your guys got a lot of playing time. You know, and you're going to need these guys the month of September, the rest of this month, October, November, and December as we go ahead. So spin this forward. Spin this forward. Take it as a positive. The media will bury you, which is great. You know, Stephen A. got his laugh in last night. He loves that more than anybody. But let them all enjoy it. But now you got your team's attention. And I think what you really got to focus on is that defense is not letting it get to their head, because they let a team average 7.4 yards per carry on them.
Well, and that's
when they had no business doing that.
That's what I'm thinking, Michael, is from the media standpoint, maybe these guys were letting the clippings get to their heads a little bit, reading their own headlines, thinking that they were holier than thou. And then you have a team like Arizona that comes in and beats you down that way. You mentioned the penalties, 13 penalties for 107 yards, and offensively 1 of 5 in the red zone. So maybe this is the wake-up call that Dallas needed to get on track moving forward. How about Vance Joseph? Because, yes, he is still employed. So he is going to go sit down at the desk of our own Michael Lombardi after what was just a brutal defensive performance. And when I say brutal, I really mean historic, as the Miami Dolphins put up 70 points, 726 total yards, second most in NFL history, and the most since 1951. What does Vance Joseph need to hear right now as he approaches this coming week?
Well, we got to figure out what can we do well. It's really not complicated. Like, we can't right now, when you give up 70 points and you give up 5 3-play drives or less for touchdowns, and you give up six plays or less touchdowns, it's really about we do nothing well. So today we have to sit in the meeting room with the entire defensive staff and decide who are we and what we're going to be. And we're going to practice just that. Our call sheet's going to be as small as it can be, because right now we can't execute. We can't tackle. We can't get off blocks. We can't stop the run. We can't stop the pass. So we're going to go back to ground zero. And you've got to go back and decide, these are the five things we do well. And you got to stop Curly in the boat. You know, Curly in the boat is, we're going to drill one hole to let the water out of the other hole, right? So now we got two holes in the boat. That's what you did yesterday. You made two holes in the boat, and all of a sudden they got 70 points on you. That's classic Curly in the boat. You got to figure out what you do well and stay with it. And don't get bored. You may have to call cover 3 7,000 times between now and December. But at least you'll get better at playing cover 3 and you won't give up 70 points. The ball won't go over your head every play. And you'll give your team a chance to win. Your job is to give your players a chance to win. And adding more scheme isn't going to solve your problem. So you got to go back to fundamentals.
It's a far cry from the defense that made us believe Denver was a quarterback away when they went out and got Russell Wilson. So we'll see how things are able to play out here moving forward. How about Robert Saleh as he steps into your office after telling the media yesterday that his quarterback, Zach Wilson, is still the guy that gives them the best chance to win? A guy who, in the 2021 and 22 seasons, was the first quarterback since 1970 to have the worst passer rating in the NFL. He also has the worst rating to start this season. Michael, if you're talking to Robert Saleh, what are you telling your team at this point as it pertains to your quarterback? And are there any other options that you're telling him to go seek?
You know, Robert, you have a credibility problem. The more you stand in front of the media and you tell the team that Zach gives them the best chance to win, they're going to think you need to go to Pearle Vision Center, because they don't believe it. Now, I know you're protecting the general manager, Doe Douglas. I get that. And you're being a good company guy. But you're the leader of the team. And if what you say to the media affects the locker room, no one in that locker room thinks that you have a chance to win with Zach Wilson at quarterback. Now, the other problem you got is your defense isn't playing very well. You're not playing like a top five defense. You're nowhere near the Baltimore Ravens or the 85 Bears or any of that. You just gave up over 150 yards to the Patriots, and you knew they were going to run the ball in the rain. Like, it's not a surprise. Oh, my God, they ran the ball. Really? It was raining. It was windy. They weren't going to throw it that much, and they still ran for a 150. And last week, you gave up 130 yards rushing. So let's cut the nonsense out about being an elite defense. Let's fix that. But that's something you can control. Your credibility is at stake here with Wilson. So you got two issues. You got two fires burning and you only got one fire truck and you got to put them both out. And that's going to really come down to you being in the best interest of the team. Do what you have to do to protect the team. And that means bring quarterbacks in. Now, I know the offensive line, you can't, don't call Matt Ryan. He'll get killed. He'll say no. Don't call Carson Wentz. That's not what you want. But you're going to have to call somebody. You got to get somebody else in there. I don't care who it is. At least it'll uplift the team.
Yeah, and if I'm the players in that locker room, I'd rather you be real with me than lie to me to try to make me feel better, because it's not working. We all know what our eyes see. We don't need Pearl Vision Center. We see what we see just fine. And as it pertains to that Jets defense, Michael, they're going to be in for a little bit of an awakening here with the Kansas City Chiefs this week, a 9-point dog taking on that potent offense who, I mean, you saw the numbers they put up with Patrick Mahomes not even playing the majority of the second half. Let's close this thing out with Matt Eberflus, head coach of the Chicago Bears, your favorite team in the NFL, Michael. They are what we thought they were coming off of the worst results in the NFL last year. They have been brutal to this point. Justin Fields has not delivered, and they fall to 0-3 after a tumultuous week on the field and off. Chicago holds their own first-round pick and the Carolina Panthers first-rounder in next year's draft. Panthers, by the way, also 0-3, so good potential standing for that one. What changes need to be made for the Bears to the point where could Eberflus save his job given the way that things have played out so far?
Well, the good thing, Matt, you got a family that owns the team. They don't like to fire anybody. They'll hang on to a coach probably a year too long if they have to. So, you know, but you're in this situation. Your GM put you in here too as well because he wanted a year to see what Justin Fields could do. But now we know. And I've been saying this for a while. You're going to have to work around it. It's hard to work around. The problem is you're not good enough on defense. You can't get stops. You can't get turnovers. Your whole defense is built on creating turnovers. Your whole defense is built on getting the ball away. It's never built on stopping anybody. It never has been. But your front isn't good enough. So you better figure out how you can play to where you're not getting the ball thrown over your head. And you got to try to stay competitive. Look, you're in the Tampa game. You got a chance to win that game. It's 2017. Your quarterback throws a pick. You know, you got a chance in the Packer game, you let it slip away. You got to forget about that game that happened in Kansas City. You got a lot of injuries, you weren't ready to play. You got to try to get ready to play against Denver, and you got to lift the morale of the team because you got to hold everybody accountable, including yourself. But it's hard. It's hard when you know you don't have enough good players.
Michael, 30 seconds. The Kansas City Chiefs tight end, Travis Kelce, he steps in the office. What advice you giving him about Taylor?
Well, I think the best thing you can do now is lay low. We all know you're dating her. Like, we don't all need to know about it. Like, just lay low. There's enough Travis Kelce on the airwaves, whether it's your commercial with all the things. Like, lay low. It's all good. You got. As Belichick said, you're catching the hell out of the ball.
I have never known Travis Kelce to lay low, so I'm very interested to see how this whole thing plays out. Michael, a fantastic addition of Step Into My Office. Way to tell these guys what they need to hear. Set them straight. We've got to step aside, but when we come back, our own Mike Pritchard will join the program. We'll get his perspective and analysis on the Monday Night Football doubleheader, as well as Pritch's points reaction from this past weekend in the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every game day. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw $5 down on any of these epic matchups to walk away an instant winner. Tonight's options with the Monday Night Football doubleheader, looking ahead to next week as well. Football's more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with the code VEGAS, V-E-G-A-S. New customers bet just $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Use that code VEGAS. The crown is yours. And boy, has this show flown by today as we wrap things up here on the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi, you know, and Stormy with you. What's up?
Can I give you a little credit today? I mean, like, you know, losing your last Survivor ticket, you've handled yourself really well today. I'm proud of you. Thank you. Femi both. I mean, Femi was out last week. Now he regrets it, you know, because he was taking Cleveland this week, which would have put him in pretty good shape. But you're handling it pretty well. I'm impressed with you, Stormy. I thought you were going to be depressed the entire day.
You know, I was big mad yesterday, and my dad and I still haven't even talked because we're doing the contest together, and we exchanged like 2 text messages yesterday, and they were just gifts of misery, and we still haven't gotten on the phone to talk yet because we went back and forth between whether or not it would be the Jags, Kansas City, if we wanted to use them earlier, save them later on in the season. And then he wanted Seattle. And I really was adamant about not doing Seattle. So we ended up going with my pick. And so I just don't even want to hear it from him because I already know he's going to go in on
the woulda,
shoulda, coulda.
What were you against Seattle? Did you think that with Andy Dalton, you felt there was a chance, right?
I did. And
I could see that.
So that I don't want to hear the woulda, shoulda, coulda. And then I already know, I know my dad so well and I love him to death, that he's going to stick with it and still do what his picks would be the next few weeks. And until he loses one that he would for sure pick, he's going to be mad. So I'm just treating that game, essentially the Texans-Jags game yesterday, like Voldemort shall not be named.
It's the Italian in him. Yeah. I mean, I get that. You know, I get that. And look, Kansas City would have been, a lot of people did play Kansas City. I think that was the conversation. And the people that were choosing between Kansas City and Jacksonville were going. But I think it just shows you how hard this contest is. I've said this many times. I think it's the hardest contest out there. Look, the picking 5 winners is hard. Don't get me wrong. But this one and done, you know, is really, really hard. So I'm impressed. I want to be on the record as saying I'm impressed that your ability to hang in there.
I'm a professional.
I would have been a little bit more angry. I mean, I'm still, you know, I still haven't gotten over some of the losses in my career. So I'm pretty impressive.
There are some like a couple years ago when I lost in the COVID season and Ben Roethlisberger gets COVID and he's not allowed to play in the game and we don't find out about that until after you submit picks. Like there are games like that that like really stick with you because it's just a brutal beat. It's a pick you never would have made if you got the opportunity, if you knew all of the information ahead of time, versus this one where it was just the Jags sucked and it wasn't their day and I knew that they weren't going to win right away. And after already escaping with the win on the Giants last week that I did, is like, okay, you know, you probably can't win 2 weeks in a row that way. So you just got to accept it and move on. I'm a professional, Michael. In the TV and radio world, we can't let the audience at home know what's really going on behind the scenes in our brains and our hearts. And this is what we got to do. We just got to move on. Let's do our pro tip here of the show today, because it does kind of lend to the Monday night football games tonight. We can give our final thoughts on the action that's still to come this evening. But this pertains to the Bengals-Rams game specifically, Michael, and maybe an approach that could be worth having tonight.
So don't rush to bet the buck. This is a good spot to live bet. I think that's really important, right? We don't know where Burrow is. Can we just let's watch Burrow in the first quarter. Let's see his movement. Let's watch what he does before you click on. And then once you figure it out, I think then you take a chance and you go with it. And okay, look, he's either on or he's not. And the line won't be that far from where we are. The book's not going to adjust based on they're adjusting based on score, not based on visual. So I think that gives you an advantage as a bettor to then make the correct decision.
I think that's a good angle to have. VSiN pro tips, free daily betting tips on VSiN.com. They're searchable by sport and by show. But yeah, maybe give this a live look instead of just running to the books or the counter right now with the uncertainty of Joe Burrow, because whether he plays or not, it's going to be compromised in some way, shape, or form. So how does he look? And with this game too, Michael, and you talked about the coaching job that Sean McVay has done to this point, the Rams have looked a lot better than I thought they were going to here early in the season. And especially against the 49ers, because obviously I'm a San Francisco fan, so I watched that game very closely. I was really impressed with what I saw in that game, and they weren't going away. And in a spot like this against a Bengals team that hasn't really impressed very much and has a compromised quarterback, I kind of lend myself on the surface to wanting to back the Rams in this spot. I don't think I'll get there. Pre-flop, at least, I think I might take the live betting approach, as you suggest. But the Rams are certainly the way that if I had to make a bet right now, I would probably go.
Yeah, I think look, here's the difference. I think Matthew Stafford's playing well.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how long this can go. You know,
it's the early season angle, right? You said if they're going to be good, it's going to be early.
They're going to be good. And they're going, if you're going to bet the Rams, you're going to bet them in September because they'll be healthy. And he's playing really well. He's throwing the ball and he's got, you know, and he's spreading it around. And McVay does such a great job. Tonight, watch it and ask yourself, when the receiver catches the ball, was it the scheme or was it the talent of the receiver? When you watch Cincinnati, a lot of it is the talent of the receivers that make the play because they are a talent-based scheme. And where the Rams do a great job of scheming, of getting guys open and making sure there's something there. So I think to me that's why I like the Rams early in the season. And Stafford's playing really good. And the Cincinnati secondary isn't been in tune yet, nor has their pass rush been to the level it needs to be.
This game, we have seen the spread bounce all around. Early on, the opening line was 6.5. The Bengals were favored by, got as low as just 1.5. Sitting 2 even this morning. Now a little bit more buyback on Cincinnati as they are a 3-point favorite where things sit right now. Where I do have a pre-flop bet, though, Michael, is in the first game of the night in Eagles and Tampa Bay, which we are seeing some Eagles buyback, and I am a part of that. That number now getting back up to 5.5, total 44.5. I laid the 5 with Philadelphia right before the show today. And I just feel, and I've talked about it a couple times on the show already, I just feel like we are giving a little bit too much credit to Tampa Bay because of the fact that Baker Mayfield hasn't looked terrible and that they are a right. little bit of a scrappy team. But we have this expectation for Baker Mayfield to be bad, and he hasn't been that bad. But I also look at the way that the games have played out against Minnesota, where they were outgained by 127 points and Kirk Cousins turned the ball over 3 times in the first half, which gave them an edge early and they just held on. And then week 2, you play the team that we have all agreed today is the worst team in the NFL, in the Chicago Bears, and it was a close game in the fourth quarter. So I just don't have a lot of the same appreciation for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, knowing the talent that is on this Eagles team, despite maybe a little bit of a slower start for Philadelphia. I think that they should win by a touchdown or more.
Yeah, I mean, look, they gained 437 yards against the Chicago Bears, but we know that. Now, they haven't turned the ball over all season. Think about that. They have not turned the ball over. They're +5 in turnover takeaway. They have not turned it over. I'm with you. I think we've overvalued Tampa because the two teams they play in don't have a win, right?
Yep.
And they, you know, they squeaked by Minnesota and the game's a lot closer against Chicago. So I do think there's a little bit of they have the competition. And I'm not sold that Baker's going to be able to do Baker-like things, especially considering the Eagles need to get more out of their defensive front. You know, Jordan Davis, they've got to get more out of him. Carter, they get more out of him inside. Fletcher Cox. This is a challenge. This is the best defensive front they're going to play against. I mean, Minnesota held them to 242 yards, and we know Minnesota is not a great defensive team. So I think this is a get spot for Philly, and the line going towards you, it opened at 6.5. The steam that's happening, I think it favors Philly. I really do. I'm with you on it.
And I think, too, there was a lot of just high expectations for this Philadelphia Eagles team to come out from the jump, guns a-blazing because of the run that they made at the end of last season. But people were not really thinking that the coordinator turnover was going to play a large role. But I think it does make a difference and a little bit of a slow start here, but just the talent they have. And if they play even close to their potential today, Michael, I think it's a no-brainer even on the road. But that's just my two cents.
I agree with you. I mean, there's no way Baker's not going to turn a ball over. He's got going 3 games without a turnover. I'll just say that right there.
Yeah, I saw that 30 seconds on the clock, and I wanted to make more of my case, but time has run out on me today, Michael. Fun show on this Overreaction Monday, and we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. But for those of you who are joining us on DraftKings Network, Pablo Torres coming up on VSiN. It's Sharp Money. Thanks for listening and watching the Lombardi Lines.